Joe, how you doing?
Just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, this week we decided to talk about gender confusion, the war on masculinity and femininity, some of you call this gender side, confusing the sex roles, ignoring biological reality, things like the XY and XX chromosome. Right? These things are just social constructs, apparently, according to the transgendered people and their advocates or their promoters these days. Well, the destruction of the masculine and feminine. Of course, this is a war on humanity itself by disrupting something as basic as the family and something as foundational as male and female relations. Because from that we all spring, right? So
pretty much. Yeah.
So now it's a little more complicated than that because. The difference between male and female from that springs certain social conventions and institutions, which can be subject to some degree of modification or reform. So we're not like we're just we're thinking that we should not change. Nothing should ever be changed, and tradition. By golly, we got to follow tradition and convention, and nothing should ever be questioned. But nevertheless, there are fundamental differences between male and female. I don't think that's a radical statement, but nevertheless, it's being challenged today because now we have this whole transgender phenomenon that's being promoted by the media, by the mainstream press, by government laws and the stuff, and something that was really as recently as maybe 7 years ago would have been thought just completely insane is now becoming normalized, and those who are trying to promote some sort of gender sanity are becoming increasingly marginalized. And of course, all this is just an accident of history, I suppose. But nevertheless, gender war or gender side, what's your take on this? The war on gender confusion, the war on genders, this whole gender confusion thing.
Well, I think it's part of the Brave New World agenda. I think that if you look at the schematic that Huxley, gave of the future, you can see that you have just a completely stratified culture where you have intellectual stratifications and the state controls everything, right? And so how to get there? Well, you have to break apart the things that can resist, which, as you described, are the family, but moreover, the ways that family can plug into ethnicity. I mean, ethnicity could really basically fight back. So since World War II and even earlier, that was an area where the secret society focused on its destruction. We've gone over this many times, where, the ethnic communities were broken up. European ethnic communities were broken up following World War II. The great middle class was created. White middle class was created. It was out in the suburbs. It, without its ethnic sort of centrifugal energy, it was very vulnerable to pornography and also to basically sophist ideas. I mean, like in mind control, basically sex, drugs, rock and roll, and mm-hmm. feminism were all promoted to assist with the process by which the single mom could be created and the single male, right? Now, this, is a state that could be basically a starting point for recovery. So I think that when you were saying, one thing I wanted to comment on, you're saying, well, there's this fundamental difference between males and females, which the gender confusion and the different new terms that are given, you know, like the transgender and gay and all of the different terms for different kinds of supposed sexualities, you know, it's more than just words. There's a biological attack going on. If you look at the most obvious indicator of it is the sperm count in males, which is catastrophic. You know, I was reading an article within 6 months ago, and it said, yeah, the sperm count in European males is down 60% of what it was, you know, 100 years ago, 60%. And the researcher said, well, that's just the result of living in a, you know, the byproducts of the chemicals of an industrial world. No big deal.
This is more accident here? Accident of
Yeah, history. It's just history is just unfolding, and gosh darn it, we're getting genocide, and it's all by mistake. But the thing is, what I would point out is that you can't have such an enormous fundamental shift in basically, you know, an aspect of health like sperm count and not have a whole bunch of other things going on that are destructive. And at the same time, you have to have an exact equivalent effect upon females, right? Mm-hmm. So when you see that one data that we've lost 60% of our sperm, what you're really looking at is a picture of our biological health that is catastrophic, and the focus of the destruction is gender. Right, because, or certainly is one of the focuses, because what this does is that when you have low sperm count, you have, at the same time, you have lower testosterone, go hand in hand, mm-hmm. In males. But you will also have higher testosterone in females. Okay, so in other words, the genders are blurring. Now, this goes perfectly well with the cesspool Hollywood culture that's being promoted, right? Because there, for a very, very long time, they've been basically putting dresses on men, you know, as a way basically to prepare for a polysexual culture, mm-hmm. where there aren't any males and females, that there is no one really in these specific camps. These are old-fashioned criteria. In fact, everyone is polysexual. If you look at the history of this, you'll see it goes all the way back to certainly as far as Gregor Luchas, who we've talked about many times, the father of cultural Marxism. And when he controlled the Hungarian Soviet in 1919, he did two things to the kids. He gave them a degenerate sex education, tried to basically give the position that marriage and monogamy were capitalistic perversions. And then he also would march the children off to these camps immediately after the sex generation, degenerate sex education, to these fairy tale places where they would tell the kids stories about, you know, animals being humans, basically. And Luchas wrote that, you see, this is like even more communist than we could ever have imagined, because they're even losing this bourgeois aspect of being human. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So when you get then into Hollywood, you can see that they have been promoting, you know, since Milton Berle, you know, yes. He's probably the first, you know, best known transvestite, you know, very lovable, you know, classic Jewish comedian, makes you laugh, ha ha, ha ha, but he also has a dress on all the time, right? Mm-hmm. You go forward and you get, you know, Tony Curtis, you know, this kind of stuff where it's cute, they're dressing up like women.
No, Some Like It Hot, yeah.
Some Like It Hot, and then Tom Hanks, of course, starts out.
Which is like Some Like It Hot, yeah. That
yeah, changing places, you know.
Or it was Bosom Buddies, yeah.
Bosom Buddies, right. Now the thing is, there's a comedian who I really like. I don't like comedians very often. In fact, I loathe comedians. Think the whole genre is disgusting. But people like to laugh, and so, you know, we promote a lot of these people as heroes. But anyway, there is a comedian I like. His name's Dave Chappelle. He's a black guy.
Oh, yeah, man.
And very witty guy. I don't know how much of his material he writes, but as you know, as I have seen him on a few times, he's a very funny guy. And he had some mental problems and had to drop out of show business for a while. There are a lot of rumors about what had gone on. But before it happened, he gave an interview and he said, you know, he said, I just wouldn't let them pressure me into wearing a dress. And he goes, why do we always have to dress up like women? And he challenged them, the producers of the shows that he was on. And he said that, like, black men always have to wear dresses. And he talked about Martin Lawrence, you know, mm-hmm. with Big Mama. But just going back, he was saying, you know, all of these guys have to wear dresses. It's all just this classic thing that they will find a way to put a dress on a male. And so, you know, now as you look forward, you know, moving into, you know, current events, you can see that the homosexual culture is now spawning the transgender culture. Okay, mm-hmm. comes right from it. And, you know, two really famous examples are, you know, Bruce Jenner becoming Caitlyn Jenner. Mm-hmm. And I would just say, Tim, that this is clearly, in my mind, a deliberate cultural polluting operation, to use the term. Because you know, transvestites, surgical transvestite, very rare. 1 in 10,000, 1 in 100,000, try to get the statistics, but man, it's very, very rare. And so you couldn't have a family that had been so culturally destructive also, you know, and so public, also just accidentally spawn a transvestite, a surgical transvestite. So that was, you know, deliberate operation. It's just how they're normalizing the transgender culture. And then also the other, I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to call it amusing, but the Wachowski brothers, the people who produced The Matrix, mm-hmm. And now both of them have had sex change operations.
Both of them. I did not hear about that.
Now you've missed it. Well, you see, you're not current with, you know, Hollywood gossip, Tim. I was shocked when I found this out, but the Wachowski brothers are now known as the Wachowski sisters, because they've both gone under the blade and have become women.
Now, does this strike you as maybe these things aren't, these are just stories they're being told, and these are.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. Yeah. I mean, see, the thing is, it's sort of, you know, like Sandy Hook or yeah. you know, the Parkland things. I see the pixelated world, Tim, mm-hmm. you know, it's here in my computer. There it is. You know, look, they've gone under sex change. I mean, there's all the little kids getting killed. I mean, and you can believe what you want. I don't believe any of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would have to actually, you know, put my hands in the wounds to believe these things, because yeah. I know that the media is being controlled by the oligarchs for propaganda. I know yeah. that. Okay. So therefore, when something happens that has enormous social cultural impact, I just don't go, oh, I'll believe that.
I mean, taking back to the Parkland thing, one of the alleged survivors is that one female with a bald head, right?
Yeah.
And you just see her everywhere, and she's supposed to be one of the spokespersons, and that's been picked out. Apparently, you know, there's nearly 3,000 people that went to that school, students, and there's a 10 witnesses that the media focuses on for some reason. But yeah. one of them is this obviously, you know, is a bald-headed
lesbian,
and so why sure. is that? You know, so you know,
yeah. yeah. Well, I mean, it's obvious that this is. The pixelated world is a world that has been designed to wreck classical heterosexual European culture. Mm-hmm. That's what it does. And I mean, were these people picked deliberately? Of course, obviously. It was just sort of like saying, well, I mean, why did the Kardashians become a famous family?
The O.J. Simpson case, I guess.
Are they talented? Are they even attractive? I mean, Kim had a sex tape with where she was wearing eye makeup that was supposedly produced by her mother, which I don't know if it's true or not, but that's the rumor I heard. But that shouldn't be the grounds for a television show.
Yeah, Bruce Jenner was off the radar for the better part of 3 decades.
Yeah.
Last time I remember seeing Bruce Jenner was he was like, I think he was on Chips, the TV show. And all of a sudden he became a household name again after 2010.
Yeah, it was ludicrous. I mean, if you look at any of the, I mean, it's so the pixelated world, I mean, once, you know, I always go back, once 9/11 occurred and people could see, you know, the buildings fall straight down, planes just disappear. I mean, they're just messing with our minds. Now, obviously, some of the film footage is real. Some is fake, but you can't tell one from the other.
Yeah, like a movie.
It's like a movie, right. It's like with special effects. You don't know which is real. Yeah. You just can't. And so the whole relationship between the individual, the people listening to our show, you and I, and everybody, to the pixelated world should be changed. We should change that to the point where we go, you know, I don't buy any of it, not a single thing. I have to do my own information sourcing. And in terms of sexuality and this gender confusion, I think we can actually, you know, go so far as to say that you really can't trust the medical profession with any of this stuff. If I was a young person and interested in having a family, and everyone should be, everyone should. This is a very natural thing, right? If you don't have that desire, you have to look into yourself and find out what's wrong. But in any case, assuming that I was in that role, the first thing I would do is like get my sperm count checked, mm-hmm. and try to get some blood chemistry to see how much toxicity I'm you know, dealing with, because we are under attack. The attack is in our mind, but it's also in our body. And so then you'd have to, you know, if you found out that you go, wow, you know, look at my sperm count compared to, you know, these baselines set in the 1930s, don't really know how I'm going to have any kids. And then you have to ask yourself, well, also, what else is there about my personality that is unreal, that has been actually defined by the oligarchs through the chemical attack, right? So, you know, this would be an advice, because I'm a male, I focus on that side of it. But I would do the exact same thing if I was a woman. I don't know exactly how I would go about it. I certainly wouldn't trust, you know, the medical profession. I would try to do my own research into what the blood chemistry of a healthy female looks like in terms of estrogen and testosterone, progesterone, the different hormones. And then I would look at diet. One thing that I, you know, if we talk about gender confusion, in my mind, I mean, I'm very concerned about vaccine for brain damage to people, right? Autism. Mm-hmm. But the overall food intake, it's worrisome, because you have so much estrogen mimicry that goes on in the different, like foods that come in, you know, all of these synthetic oils. And then also, I've been told by people, you know, seem smart to me, that the clothing, a lot of the plastic, you know, the polyester, gets in through the skin. And then again, it's an estrogen mimicry, and it just screws up everyone's hormones. So it's a toxic soup, Tim, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's what they've created, a world of toxicity, not just cultural, but also literally it's toxic with the chemicals and all the pollution. Something simple as clothes. Of course, they have to do that because the polymer industry is derived from the petroleum industry, which gets us back at the Rockefellers, I guess. But yeah, you can't have clothes made of hemp, right? I have a couple of hemp shirts; they're great. But or other materials like for storing of food and bottles, they can make spoons, they can make out of hemp and this stuff, and which doesn't have any of the toxicity issues. But for some reason, they rely on plastic, and of course, plastic is toxic. It's not a good thing to store your food in plastic. It should be clean. Yet it's done all over the world now out of convenience. But it's interesting you mentioned the media, because the media is promoting this far out of proportion to the general population. So it's creating a misperception that this thing is much a larger issue or problem than it really is. If you look at TV, LGBTQ characters, if you want to use that term, you know, are far overrepresented in TV shows than they are in real life. If you had a real pluralistic society, one would expect the proportion of representation on these shows to mimic society. It doesn't. It's heavily overrepresented. In fact, shows are becoming increasingly, the homosexual or transgender theme is just often just thrown in the TV shows, and it's promoted. Good example, if there's an adverse reaction to one's homosexuality or coming out or a transgender person, the adverse reaction is considered pathological, and it's the people who can't deal with it are the problem, as opposed to the person's affliction or way he's behaving. And so that's how it's subtly promoted, and it's thrown out there on all these TV shows and promoted that way. And that's, I mean, don't, we shouldn't underestimate the importance of these TV shows in affecting behavior. I was reading an article, I think it was posted on the New Nationalist website, and it cited about this gate about the increase of bisexuality in TV programming. And he just shows this one, one show called Mr. Robot, where for some reason or they just threw a scene in with a guy sodomizing another guy. And this is on television, just on the USA Network. Charming. And this stuff runs at night, then it runs during the day. Of course, everyone gets cable TV, so just how many children are watching that, how many young children are watching it. And it's bad even for adults to watch, but it's particularly atrocious when children watch that stuff. The stuff that, you know, someone feels as if, you know, someone is perfectly happy producing that, then broadcasting for everyone to see. But in the article, he cites, in the U.S. National Library of Medicine and National Institute of Health, a 2007 peer-reviewed article in the Journal on Homosexuality made the following critical observation. According to social cognitive theory, one important way in which television influences viewers is by providing vicarious experiences in which to model beliefs, attitudes, behavior when real-life experiences are more limited. Because this is all, now I'm not quoting, but, you know, the more we rely on the pixelated world for our information, the more subject we are to this. A closely related idea is that in the media, by depicting sexual scenarios that people might not be able to see anywhere else, provide scripts for enacting various sexual behaviors, such as people having sex with a new partner, reliance on television shows for sexual scripts and television characters as models for behavior may be particularly strong among youth who may not have much firsthand experience with sexuality, yet are starting to solidify their sexual identities and become interested in sexual relationships. In fact, as many as 1 in 5 teens report that entertainment is the most important source of sexual information. Now, it's funny, you require, you know, this type of analysis requires something in a peer-reviewed medical journal, but this is common sense, right? I mean, this is what people knew. You shouldn't show things to kids. This is why exposing kids to such material was considered particularly heinous, and why it would get you beaten up, or if not worse, in an earlier generation.
Sure.
With males with higher sperm counts, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
clearer minds, yeah.
So the media, I mean, so yeah, obviously the media is playing a big part in this. And this isn't the whole Bruce Jenner thing and all that, but it's been heavily promoted. And not just the of course, we're talking about the most, obviously the transgender thing, the homosexual thing, that is lesbian thing. That would be the most acute example of gender confusion. But there's also, I think, maybe the more pernicious one is the more subtle form, and that's obviously the gender confusion that's promoted by, you know, third wave feminism, even second wave feminism. But the idea that the sexes are interchangeable. They may be distinct, but they're interchangeable. There is no specific role for a father or for a mother, and so they can, you know, the mother can be the mother can go to work full time, the father can go to work full time, and the kid can, you know, just be warehoused at daycare or to school. Society can just roll along fine, but that's probably where it's most destructive. And, you know, we've seen this for the better part of perhaps 2-3 generations, is the promotion of women working full time, meaning not working in the home, providing a household, raising the kids, particularly the younger kids, and supporting her husband. There was a time when society supported that economically, socially, culturally, but now that's been under assault for the better part of 50 years, overtly. This started, of course, did you remember the Aaron Russo interview with, I think it was Alex Jones, where he, Aaron.
I remember. Yeah. About the Rockefellers. Yeah.
Nicholas Rockefeller. And they talked about a number of things, 9/11 and things like that, foreknowledge. But one of the things they did talk about was feminism. And Nicholas Rockefeller asked Aaron Russo, what was feminism all about? And Aaron Russo gives a particular pedestrian view, which is about giving women equality and opportunity. And Nick Rockefeller goes, you idiot. No, it wasn't. It was about getting women out of the home, into the workforce, where they can be separated from their children, the family can be weakened, and they can be converted into taxpayers, wage slaves. And that's what they've done. And at the same time, it's flooded the labor market and lowered wages. So now the man as the breadwinner wasn't viable anymore. And this creates a vicious cycle where if he's not viable anymore, what are women supposed to do? Depend on men who can't make enough money? But they don't see where the rug was pulled out from under the men, you know, in the previous generation. And this also followed a lot of economic policies in the 60s and 70s, macro and micro, taxes, inflation, debt, the destruction of the gold standard, and the bringing in of inflation and increasing debt and these things. And that also coincided with the stagnation of wages in the 1970s and the destruction of industry in the United States. The deindustrialization destroyed high-paying jobs for low-skilled men who would be primary breadwinners for families. And this was destroyed. And the emasculating effect had on men. At the same time, the emasculation of men and the emasculation of women through feminism and also promoting work. And this is sold as opportunity to go out and work for a living, go out and earn Federal Reserve notes and pay taxes and ignore your responsibilities back home. And what it does is it creates a situation where the sexes are actually literally competing with another as opposed to being complementary to one another. And when you have that, well, you're going to have less, you know, you're going to have less children, and you have weaker families, higher divorce rates. And this also creates a very hostile situation for children who need to be nurtured and protected, particularly in the early years, because if they're in broken homes, they are going to be subjected to physical abuse, sexual abuse. And also they're going to be, since they don't have a mother at home to watch them, they're watching more television, or they're at daycare, but they're watching more television where this programming like Mr. Robot is being broadcast. And this produces more gender confusion. Then they wonder why people are confused today. Not to mention also the toxicity levels. So they're getting it at all levels. And this wasn't just something just unfolded, because we know in the 1960s there was a Planned Parenthood was commissioned by the U.S. government that was supposedly represents us all. The U.S. government played Planned Parenthood to have a meeting. This is called the Jaffe Memo, where it listed a series of initiatives that Planned Parenthood and other, organizations, think tanks would promote in American society. And that was promoting the restructure of the American family, get people to postpone marriage, change their idea of ideal family size, encourage homosexuality. Now, how do you encourage homosexuality if it occurs naturally? Well, you can encourage it by creating hostile environments where people are traumatized and they don't have fathers to relate to. Absentee fatherhood is a big cause of this stuff. And also abuse, sexual abuse. And then for broken homes, they're more subject to sexual abuse. Creating an environment where women are required to work. Obviously increasing abortion. Of course, the Supreme Court supplied that in 1973. Promoting contraception. That's another thing the Supreme Court aided, because by overturning laws against contraception in 1965 in the Griswold decision, it didn't allow adults access to contraception. What it did is it opened the door for governments promoting it. And there's a big difference of actually promoting it, promoting in schools. And the irony is they said by promoting contraception, you would avoid things like teenage pregnancy, where after they started promoting contraceptives, teenage pregnancy exploded, illegitimacy exploded. These things, and they knew it was going to happen, because you by promoting contraception, you fundamentally changed people's attitude towards sex. Actually, they eventually would adopt a more libertine attitude towards sex, which increases sexual activity, which increases more illegitimate babies. You know, this whole thing, you know. It's hard to believe this is just actually. I don't believe it's just an accident because we have the documentation, the efforts. Ironically, the so-called AIDS scare, the AIDS hysteria, which is largely a hoax, was used to promote homosexuality, promote sexual permissiveness in the 1980s, and we have the memos about that. The government, this is an opportunity to introduce graphic sexual material to children, which parents would otherwise oppose because they're worried about AIDS, this virus that's going to get you. So the children have better be educated, you know. It's right. Nonsense.
Yeah, sex education.
Yeah, which goes back to like Gregor Luca's.
Of course, strategy. It's all just one system against European culture. And anytime you're the expression sex education, man, you get your flashlight and turn over the rocks because there's reptiles near you.
And look at sports. What they've done with sport. Now, you know, I'm critical of sports. I'm not a big fan of college sports and male. I mean, I think sports has largely been corrupted, and particularly as you get to the higher levels, college and professional. But with Title IX, they started promoting women in sports. It's obviously social engineering, but Title IX presumes that women and society in general are going to have the same interest in women's sports as men's sports. Well, that's absurd. They're not. So they have to force it down everyone's throat with Title IX. But you have outfits like ESPN promoting gender confusion. I was at the last year. I was at just at the gym. They had ESPN on, and it's supposed to be about sports. And instead, they're doing a up and close interview with that high school wrestler down in Texas who identified as a woman and qualified in women's wrestling, and he won surprisingly. You know, and there are adults sitting around watching this man wrestle women and win, and they're putting up with this. Everyone should just walk out. You also have the phenomenon of MMA fighting, right? Women boxing, which is now becoming normalized. You know.
Yeah.
This brutalization of women that's occurring, because so.
And the women, of course, who are doing it are just very close to the pure transgender personality, right?
They're
bulging muscles, and you know, mm-hmm. they just look like men, basically.
Of course. You know. So it's all around, and it's being overly promoted. Obviously, if you go to a college or university campus, healthy heterosexual relationship is actually pathologized, and homosexuality is promoted. You know.
Well, Tim, that's really good information. I hope everyone who hears this on a podcast, you know, basically just moves a little ball back and re-listens to all that, because in that stream you have just dozens and dozens of really important facts and conclusions. And so, yeah, that's wonderful information. I had noticed a little strand that I thought might have some value, which is sort of basically, you know, an aspect of how the media was promoting this and how people can actually just see the process. I was trying to come up with an example, and I'll just give you the one I came up with, which is that if you look at the Beatles, they are, you know, obviously a little more metrosexual than you know, Elvis Presley. They have long hair, you know, slightly feminine, nothing too, difficult to grasp. Teenage girls really like these guys, but everyone did, you know. But then they produced the Rolling Stones. You look on Sergeant Pepper's, you know, and you see, you know, welcome Rolling Stones, you know, it's like, well, this is like a little cryptic idea that the Beatles were helping usher in the Stones, you know, because of the music, the similarity in music, you know, mm-hmm. they play the British Invasion, but the Stones went a step further. And if you look at Jagger, you can see very often he posed as a transsexual, you know, as a woman, you know, he would wear makeup and often, you know, pretty glammed up as a woman in different, you know, he had a lot of different phases and looks and things. But one of the things that he was really, you know, known for was kind of being out there in terms of feminine representation. And then, you know, the next step would be David Bowie.
Yeah.
Now, Bowie is basically just the pure transvestite look, right? I mean, he would actually, you know, basically in many of the phases, you know, he would be more feminine in appearance than masculine, you know, just very, you know, heavy makeup and just like it looked like a transvestite.
Mm-hmm.
And then look at some of his lyrics, you know, like you've got your mother in a whirl. She's not sure if you're a boy or a girl. Rebel, rebel.
Yeah.
You know, and so they promote the ideas, and the music, of course, you know, has this direct access to the subconscious. And so who's ever creating these lyrics is, you know, a specialist in this.
The Kinks with Lola.
Stock, you know, specialist
Remember the Kinks with Lola?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so you have that information, you know, getting to people, you know, that first of all, that your rock idols are bisexual, right? And that they put out these images and words, you know, that kind of seed the ground so that as the process moves forward and as the toxicity gets worse and, you know, you have this really difficult time in being physically a male or being physically a woman because of the toxicity, sperm count is way down. I think there would be a corresponding, diminution in egg production in females, you know, so that you're really having a blurring of the sexes through the toxicity. And then, of course, you also had in the 60s and early 70s, you had Herbert Marcuse, and he was talking about polysexualism, you know, about it's okay. You know, and he was what his term was, you know, you can have sex with men, you can have sex with women. It doesn't really matter. It's all good, clean fun. And then as you go forward, then you finally come to Miley Cyrus, and you know, she describes herself just openly as a polysexual, and that she says, you know, some weeks I'm into women and other weeks I'm into men. And so now the sexual identity that is being given to children is basically mirroring the physical attack that's going on, you know, to their bodies through the toxic soup that had been created for them. So, and then, of course, you can now, you now go forward, you know, where, you know, everything is always in motion. Nothing is static in culture. It's always moving, or very often it's moving. And when it moves, it may move slowly, but it always moves in kind of, you know, coherent, easy to understand, you know, directions. And when you see like the show we talked about last week, The Shape of Water, where you know, the woman fell in love with the fish, you know, you can see that, you know, you use the expression GBTQ. I mean, I've never heard that. I'm old fashioned. I know gay, lesbian, transgender. What is Q? Is Q the fish?
Queer.
Oh, queer. I'm sorry. Well, how about GBTQ T for tadpole?
There you go.
Because I think that's kind of where I think that they're going to try to break apart just humanity.
Well, it's that identity thing, as if language can change reality, or language should have no correspondence to reality. That's really totalitarian. It's like in 1984, is, you know, freedom is the ability to say 2 + 2 = 4. And the idea is once you can convince someone that 2 + 2 = 5 because the party says so, and that has no correlation or relation to reality, then language becomes weaponized. And an example of that is very subtle, is just with the sex change or sex reassignment, because they really don't change the sex. You really just get mutilated and you get hormonal treatments that give you cancer 20 years later. But the idea that just because someone wants to identify as a female and demand that you use feminine a pronoun or a male pronoun, vice versa, to me is absurd, because you're demanding that the person deny reality and with their language. They have to lie to themselves. That's really totalitarian, and that's really horrifying. I mentioned this because I was, you know, that guy in Canada, Jordan Peterson, who's all the rage.
Yeah.
interesting talk. He makes some interesting observations and all this stuff about some of this SJW nonsense. And he's definitely worth listening to. And he says a lot of good things, I have to admit. But I had him say one interview where he's talking about calling someone a she because he wants to identify as a female. And he said he's against the law making you do that, but he would do that. He might do that himself. And to me, that's quite a concession, because the words you use when you identify someone should correlate or should be consistent with reality. And you are indeed talking, if you are indeed talking to a man, then you should say, use a male pronoun or talking about a man. He did this. If you start saying just because you change your name and you put a wig on, you have to start referring that person as a she now, the language loses any relation to reality. And he conceded that. And I said, that's the ultimate identity stuff. No, because the language should mean something. And this is how we keep 2 feet on the ground, how we know what we're talking about. We're on terra firma. And we can, and if we can't have the language and have words mean things that we both agree on, we can have no dialogue. I mean, we get introduced into this nonsense where you have, 52 different genders or 60 different genders or 72 or 140. I don't care. It's a nonsense. And even when he says that I would, just out of courtesy, I'd refer to a he as a she if they wanted to, he's not against that. To me, that philosophically, that's a corruption to do that.
Sure, and I would say that he really doesn't understand the real principle at issue, because you can have the individual relationship where this person wants to be called a she even mm-hmm. though it's a he, but all language basically is an influence on culture, mm-hmm. and if you do that, if you then basically normalize this person's desire to have the change of pronouns, you are basically taking culture one step in the wrong direction. And then if everyone insists upon it who wants it, it'll become a fad, and then all of culture will be confused. So you have to remember why you want to have the sexes identified. It leads to a healthy biological culture that's viable, mm-hmm. that regenerate, right? So that when you refuse to call him a she, you aren't, you hope you can communicate to him or her, whoever you want to call him, that this isn't, I'm not trying to insult you. I am trying to address a transcendent principle. I need to support the capacity of generation, of the idea that we are men and women, and that if you want to deny your sexuality, that's your business, but I want to promote a healthy culture. Mm-hmm. And that means I can't, give in to every time someone wants to change the definition of something that is fundamental to the creation of a healthy culture. It would be like a pedophile wanting to be called, some kind of euphemism for affectionate for children. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the meaning of the words are very, very important for the support of culture. And so that's all I would say to the guy is that, I'm not going to call you she. I'm sorry, but I hope you understand. I'm not trying to insult you. And I'm not trying to hurt your feelings. What I'm trying to do is to make sure that language is supporting a culture that is healthy.
Yeah. And it's also honest, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honesty and health often.
Yeah. Yeah. It's honest.
They go hand in hand sometimes. So there it is.
And one of the ways that they've really confused the sexes, I think, goes back to the introduction of the birth control pill in 1963, because it supposedly liberated women from the burdens of pregnancy, and they could now behave like men, as if that was a good thing. They didn't acknowledge the fact that women's self-defense concern for themselves and their natural, you could say, their natural inhibition and modesty protected them and also restrained the men. It created a sort of a a dating scenario or a market in dating, which had a positive effect on male behavior. But it really, what it really did was, in the guise of liberating women, it actually relieved men of the responsibility of fatherhood, and subsequently unleashed a whole lot of, you know, libertine attitude and a lot of freer attitude towards sex. Only problem is it didn't get rid of the consequences of sex, whether it's social, you know, sexually transmitted diseases or unwanted pregnancies, you know, and all the pathologies that come from that. I was listening to a talk for a lady up at Hillsdale College. She was talking about the sexual revolution, her book. I think the book's called Adam and Eve After the Pill. And she's talking about the town she grew up in upstate New York, where this was in 1972, so it wasn't the Stone Age. But it is the year, a few months before the Supreme Court came down with the Roe v. Wade decision. And there was a young teenage girl, high school, who got pregnant, and she was impregnated by a young soldier who just came back from Vietnam. And what happened was the man refused to marry her. And so she went off, had the baby, gave the baby up for adoption, came back, and lived her life. But she said the opprobrium that was visited upon the man was almost universal in town, because the idea was he should have done the right thing and been responsible. And almost every adult in that small town agreed with that. And he had to leave town because there was so much shame. And then she said 20 years later, 1992, when she was there, she went back to her hometown. And she found out that 30% of the high school class, women, the girls in that class, were pregnant. None of them were getting married, and no one seemed to really care about it. And how destructive.
Yeah, it's catastrophic.
Yeah. And what it is the men used to be, what's there is the men are being liberated from their responsibility and are subsequently being emasculated. I'm not saying there's any responsibility of the women, but what the pill did is it created the illusion that sex itself doesn't it can be totally recreational, erotic, and have nothing to do with procreation. Well, the procreative aspect of sex reminds us of the reality of responsibilities and why it's an important thing. To make sure the person you decide to have conjugal relationships with or sexual relationships with can take care of the offspring that it likely will produce, and so that's going to create more responsible behavior. But again, what it is by the essential procreative aspect? The fertility and procreative capability of women, their womb is their fundamental difference than men. And so, you know, and so, but by medicating their wombs by taking the birth control pill, they were sold the illusion that they could just go out and have fun, be sexual. This is the sexual revolution in these things, but that's not the reality though. And so the reality is a country that has almost one out of every two babies being born out of wedlock, skyrocketing divorce rates, men and women, the dating scenario, from what I understand, the dating world is very difficult these days because both men and women don't really know what to expect of each other, relate to one another. Men get very bitter. Men go their own way because maybe they have unrealistic expectations because of pornography. Women no longer know how to compliment men. And to make them feel comfortable around them, or they can't maintain these relationships because they've become harpies, or you know, they expect too much, and as a result, they're not getting together. And you hear both of them complain about why aren't there any good men out there? And you hear men say, "Well, the women are just awful, their attitudes about things." Well, this is a product of all this stuff.
Yeah, you know, and I think the most. Or one of the most useful things that you and I can do is to establish a dating service. I think that we should have Tim and Joe's online dating service for the free-minded individual. Mm-hmm. So that what we would do is we would say, okay, well, there are two people, a man and a woman, that would like to have a relationship. But they know that they are coming from a toxic, psychic environment and a toxic physical environment. Mm-hmm. And so they are really going to have to struggle in order to create a family. And even though it may sound, you know, facetious, I'm not sure it wouldn't be a bad idea to actually, if they wouldn't talk to Tim and Joe, but just to talk among them to themselves about, you know, we're really going to face a lot of problems. And one of the key problems is ourselves, you know, that in a healthy culture, sexual pleasure is designed to be strictly inside of, you know, a relationship.
Yeah.
Right. And in a culture that is pornographic, then the pleasure is available outside of relationship. And therefore it makes it very difficult to have relationships, because why have a committed relationship when you can just go to a singles bar and have sex in that way? Well, you know, the men need to see that when they are 40 and 50 and alone and not having much luck in the single bar anymore, that they have wrecked their lives with this approach to sexuality. And women, when they are reaching those, you know, if they are feminists and working hard in the workplace and not compromising to, you know, put up with men, you know, they're not going to be happy either later in life. We are really social animals, and we have to create social relationships. We have to use the time of our lives where you have different kinds of energies. You can't just throw those times away. You need to use those energies, the high level of sexuality and energy and, you know, optimism, all things that are completely gone when you get to be my age.
Well, it's funny. The traditional understanding of masculinity and femininity was fulfillment and happiness came through sacrifice and service to the other. Whether it's the man working hard to support his family and deriving pride from being able to support his family, and the woman deriving pride from supporting her man and raising the kids. And now we live in a society which promotes all this narcissism, right? In the media.
Yeah, exactly. And narcissism is promoted for that very purpose. Yeah. And you see, people, they talk about, like, you know, don't be a square, do your own thing. So they have command of the language, and so this helps direct culture in the wrong direction. The right way to express concepts like feminism and doing your own thing is the term easy to enslave, because that's why those things have been put into culture, is to fragment the things that the oligarchs would have a hard time controlling, which basically is strong families, strong ethnicity. So they get, you know, these other expressions, sex, drugs, rock and roll, do your own thing, feminism. And that takes you where you think it's going. This is more fun. Look, I watch pornography and I go to the single bar and then I have sex and the woman leaves and I'm just free to do it all over again next week. Why would I bother with something as, horrible as a committed relationship? Well, it's because it will provide 100 times more satisfaction ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we promote with the Tim and Joe dating service, it may look like when you come that, you know, gee, it's not going to be much fun. Well, you're wrong. It's going to be a heck of a lot more satisfaction and pleasure if you end up with real relationships than if you stay outside of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, you know, there is value to strength and virtue beyond just, you know, the sense of heroism. It's that you just are so much happier in a real social environment where you have, you know, children and extended family. And this is the only way that our physiology can really ever be completely ourselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's that environment. And so that would be the first thing that I would tell people, is that you're not going to some place that is, because we want to, you know, recreate, strong ethnic European community, we're going to breed and give up all these sacrifices. Listen, you're going to be heading toward a place, if you go into a real relationship, that is far greater and better, you know, for your own satisfaction than you could ever find in a life of of singles bars and feminine economic triumph. I mean, those things are basically just out there in defiance of biology, because the oligarchs know that, you know, at the end of the day, that you'll be isolated and you're easy to enslave.
Yeah, and just the sheer mathematics, if a couple gets together and has three or four kids, they've already had, just in a numerical measurement, produced something greater than themselves.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, that's what you want to do. Definition of what they really want, the best explanation or description of how the oligarchs want people to view at life is what E. Michael Jones said, that we all belong at the gay disco. And what he means by that is not that we're all homosexual, but we behave like homosexuals in our lives.
Hook up sex. Jones was referring to is just the sexuality of the homosexual, because it doesn't create children.
It's so sterile,
it doesn't have a committed family structure around it. This just underlines that this kind of sexuality is not the premier natural sexuality of the human being. And if it becomes predominant in culture, there is sickness in the cultural creation, the intellectual side of culture, and probably also really deep sickness in the physiological side. And, you know, and Tim, I just wanted to throw in, you know, the transgender people and homosexual people who are listening, I'm sure there are thousands. Mm-hmm. Look, not hating on you, I would say you are victims.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, you may not understand how you have been victimized, but you should look into it.
Well, it's just a more acute example of a sexual dysfunction. But I would say the Lothario, the pickup artist, has an equally unhealthy view of sex.
It's
misdirected. It's misdirected.
Yeah.
You know, so that, you know, we're all affected. We all grew up in a very society that's awash in pornography and misdirection and confusion. These things, and some of us were fortunate enough to grow up in a family environment which we're healthier, or just we made the right friends. We were lucky. These things, but we're all affected by it. The point is.
But this is how you can fight back.
Yeah.
You know, if you come to the awareness, you go, look, I can see the schematic. I can see that we're under attack, that there's secret society controls government. Mm-hmm. I know 911 was an inside job. What the hell can I do? Well, because there was a person who was here visiting Southern California this week, and this was an issue, you know, that. You know, the stress, the kind of the tension of not feeling like you can really do something about this. The best thing you can do, the first thing, is have a strong family.
Yeah.
You know, and then teach your children, as we talked about last week, you know, the basic steps of understanding truth. That's how you fight back.
Well, cut off cable television so you don't have access to USA Network, watching Mr. Robot, watching two guys engage, you know, in unnatural, you know, sex. And, just don't bring the entertainment fare that these degenerates produce into your house, because I mean, most people generally know that the people who control what we call entertainment are degenerates, you know, by any normal standard, they're degenerates.
All of them.
You know, so why
you couldn't be a leader in that industry and not be satisfy every criteria of the word degenerate. If you're, mm-hmm. They're all degenerates. 100%.
You know, so why subsidize it? Why bring it into your house?
You should never subsidize it. Yeah. You have to fight to keep it the hell out. It should never be in your house. And then beyond that, you have to try to do everything you can to keep it away from your children and from your spouse in the culture that they live in, even though that's a more difficult thing. But the first step is you don't let the degenerate media culture into your house. And I mean, not any part of it, you know, and nothing. You just have to say, no, I'm sorry. The Shape of Water, you know, the transgender tadpole love affair. Look, this is not, history unfolding, and it's just they're edgy, taking a culture to a new place for the purpose of making money. It's not about making money. It's about cultural domination, which is that they are atomizing and destroying the minds of all of the people who are, you know, like watching this stuff. This stuff is very sophisticated. Mm-hmm. Very sophisticated. They know exactly what they're doing, and they're trying to take culture into the brave new world. The way we fight back is, you know, the right kind of diet and the right kind of, sort of intellectual process, so we know we get the best chance at understanding the truth that we can. And then always promoting strong families and the community of families. If you're a single person, okay, and say, you know, look, you've tried but just can't fit in, find a way to support families that are trying to make it, and try to find a way to support the communion between families that are growing. Think of the future of the ethnicity and the groups that can actually reflect you to some extent in the future. Just because you're single doesn't mean there aren't things you can do. You can volunteer, there, if you look at the foster children program, I mean, my God, it's just, the pedophilia is just, rampant. If some righteous person can step up and try to mentor children, to move them in a good direction, try to help them become people capable of having a family, there are lots of stuff that can be done to move in a good direction.
Yes. Yeah. So, well, anything else? Think we covered it, or?
I mean, that was what I had to say about it, Tim. I thought your the stuff you were bringing up was, a lot of stuff was new to me, and I thought that, really good information. It's just, family is the key. It's the key to ethnicity. It's the key to the individual. It reaches up to gather, greater political strength as the families, become friends and unify and have perspective. And then it reaches down to the individual because, with a strong mother and strong father, the children can develop naturally. So, yeah. Man, this is,
and we're not talking about parenting. We're talking about motherhood and fatherhood.
Parenting is not the right term.
Not interchangeable.
They're not. And this is a good point. We really want to bring back all the old vocabulary, because it was reflecting of a healthy culture. And if we want to go back to a healthier culture, then we have to try to recreate the language to the same extent that they're trying to, promote the transgender vocabulary. We should among ourselves always, call a man by he. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't like it, we explain to him, look, it's just I'm not trying to insult you. It's just that there's a really important cultural value that has to be supported here because we want to have a generative culture. And so we're just not, I'm sorry, but I just can't use that expression with you. And then the same thing is true in terms of parenting. There's this new thing about, I notice a lot of gay parents are having children. It's they either use test tubes or adopt.
Well, it's an important accessory to have.
And they're like accessories, yeah. Sort of like you see like a lot of show business white female kind of Masonic stars, would have adopt black babies from Africa. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it literally as if they are just accessories to a, basically a kind of cultural, statement, fashion statement, I mean, it's just hideous when you think about it. Let's promote the other direction where among ourselves, let's always try to act like ladies and gentlemen and and talk like ladies and gentlemen, where we always call men he and females she.
Yeah, at least you keep the language honest so we can have some.
Let's keep the language honest, And if, one of the terms that I always use is actress.
Have you noticed that? They stopped using actress?
They dropped that because they, it's a degenerate. Like I said, Hollywood is 100% weaponized.
Yet the Academy.
I'm sure there are people in it who are not, but. But at the top, it's completely weaponized. So they dropped that as part of the language domination, you know.
Yeah, I was like, did a memo go out?
So you go, well, you know, it's like, well, but you see, language oftentimes, you know, it's for the, you know, you lose the efficiency when you try to be politically correct, because what would be the word that you would use to tell the actors who were women that they should leave the group and go over to the right?
Yes.
You know? So it would be so easy. Why don't we invent a word? Well, let's see. Actress. How's that?
I was listening.
So you can see that this is just silly.
Well, yeah, the language gets awkward. I was watching last 2016, Tim Kaine, the running mate of Hillary Clinton, used the term right-hand person, my right-hand person. I mean, it's not even poetic. It doesn't even flow right. Just like, you refer to a ship as a she, or nations as she. You know, it's like the language just doesn't work. The language, every other sentence, well, he or she, or you like saying a baseball player hits a home run. She runs the base pass. Okay, yeah, I get your point. Cute. You know, it becomes stupid. Yeah, and a good example. Yeah, they've dropped actress, yet they still have best supporting actress, best actress in the Academy Awards.
Well, you see, because there it is. Even though they need a way to separate the gender. You see, if they're going to have the have gender categories, then by God, they're going to have gender words. I would point out that 100% of like European Romance languages have gender endings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was because the gender was an important part of culture. No one was insulted by it. It was also an efficiency, because you could basically identify if there was a group of people and one of them was a woman and you needed her immediately to come to help with a thing, it would be very simple to identify through the language which one you were talking to, mm-hmm. right? It's the girl that we want to come for. The person who is wearing the skirt would not necessarily be an efficient use of language in an emergency, right? Mm. So, you know, so this whole thing is, you can see that it is an attempt to deform culture, you know, real culture, because it's not even, the language's not even efficient. So let's, let's not support it. And always bear in mind, Tim, it's because it makes us easier to enslave. And if that individual who doesn't like me calling him a he would contest, and he would say, well, it's not really a healthy culture you're taking us to, you know, there's bigotry, you know, I would say, oh, no. It is a culture that is more difficult to enslave. And there is a greater problem than your personality issues with, you know, what gender you are. There is a problem of genocide. And of a brave new world where we're going to be intellectually stratified. And these are the kinds of problems. We're living in the post 9/11 world, folks. And we can't mess around with little picayune problems like some person's, you know, irritation over not being able to be, you know, called by whatever gender he thinks.
Yeah, this is portrayed in movies. You remember the movie, the Hunger Game movies?
I don't watch that stuff. You know,
but. Well, there's some telling in that the characters, you know, the capital, the capital city, the inhabitants of the imperial capital city, where they're all living it up at the expense of everyone else. But the inhabitants are enslaved themselves. They're just beguiled and overfed and overentertained. But all the men in there are effeminate.
Yeah.
You know, well, and they have to bring in real men from the provinces. But all the men are effeminate, like they're fops, you know, they're dandies, you know, they have no virility, no strength. And that's, you know, what they want. That's the, you know,
easy to enslave. Yeah. Of course. I mean, look, the demasculization, I would say you can even see it. It's of course visible in like the Frankfurt School approach to Europeans. Look at Marcuse, right, where he has, you know, polysexualism as something that he's advocating. But it's also, you can see it in the pseudo-psychological science that the authoritarian personality is creating, right, where they talk about the authoritarian personality, right? And this is a neurosis that they have to test for. Well, wouldn't a father want to have a healthy culture, a lot of authority? Wouldn't an authoritarian personality, someone that saw himself as having authority, wouldn't that from time to time be part of health? Wouldn't that also be something that would be hard to enslave, you know? You see?
That's so interesting. I was reading it's E. Michael Jones' book about how Meyer Lansky took over the Cincinnati Ballet.
Yeah.
And he was talking about the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Model, 1973, when it declassified or homosexuality as a psychological ailment, mental illness, and the politics behind that. And there wasn't any new finding behind it. It was political, and you mentioned the authoritarian personality and the American Jewish Committee, but all the psychiatrists behind that were all Jewish.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you have two types. You have Masons, Freemasons, and Jews.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be, if you look into the Tavistock and a lot of these psychiatric institutions, I mean, I'd have to do a precise study, but I would, just from what I can, glean, it's like over 95%,
mm-hmm.
And so then the question is, well, who are the Masons? What are they? How can they coordinate with this group? But in general, psychiatry has been very much dominated by the Freudian approach to neurosis, and that's just a completely insane and degenerate and malevolent, kind of pseudoscience that is just there to make people think that they should, rebel from the restraints of family.
Yeah. And moral restraint, the whole Freudian.
Moral restraints. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Yeah. And how he could even present this as, science is just with a straight face is beyond me. But they were able to, because they controlled the media, to get the public to think that it's, it's like Marxism, that this is not there. This isn't just being done, to enslave and genocide. There's some legitimate economic reason for it, or with Freud, there's some legitimate, kind of thing here. We're going to try to reduce neurosis. I mean, this is just nonsense. These things are just intellectual structures that lead to slavery and genocide. That's all they are.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing there. There is not a single sincere line. This is an exaggeration, but in general, the works of Freud and the works of Marx are sophistry. You see, this is what they are. They are clever argument, but they're taking you to a bad place. You're giving up on one side. You're giving up political control to a group that wanted to genocide you, which is never a good idea. And on the other side, you're giving up psychological control to a group that wants to make you crazy. And this is not enough. This is an equally catastrophic step to take. So you've just, we've got to get people to recognize that the group that brought us the idea that homosexuality was not basically a malady of some kind, that they were sophists, that they just had a pseudo psychological argument. I mean, it's not sincere. You just have to laugh at these people and tar and feather them, and because there just isn't any sincerity there. So this is they've created a structure, kind of an intellectual structure that the people don't complain automatically as culture moves down, into the cesspool and then into slavery and genocide. But it's just sort of like feminism. At a certain point, it should become clear to women that this was a movement that led to misery, right? Mm-hmm. The single mom is not some kind of cultural achievement. These people are miserable. Their lives are hell. So this was just a bad movement of culture. It didn't come about accidentally. Right. You look at Gloria Steinem and her connections into the oligarchs and the CIA. You can see that this was something that was being done to us deliberately. So we have to recognize we have been attacked and try to work out how we can basically move, start to shift culture back into a direction where we can live normal lives again. And this starts, in my opinion, with the promotion of family. We can really see now, can't we, Tim, you know, that with the single mom and the pornographic male reaching the conclusion of their, you know, this this period where they can now look and go, hey, this just took me off a cliff. I have a miserable existence, you know. And so we can see that. So everyone should, you know, we can say, okay, well, let's not go forward anymore with this. Let's try to figure out what happened to us and try to figure out, well, what's the path that can get us back to where we can start living lives that are worth living again.
Yeah, I mean, we should probably do a show on psychiatry itself.
We need to, yeah. Because it's an absolute cesspool. It's so often it goes right into these connections, you know, of like Tavistock, MK Ultra. It's sort of like the Nazi Party. If you start studying the origins of it, you can just see the malevolence and the deliberate way that this thing is being done for a purpose of genocide. Psychiatry is really part of the process for one thing, but it's also very easy to deconstruct, in my opinion. And you can see, you know, the pseudo-psychological ideas that were used to fool people into, you know, into accepting the single mom and the pornographic male.
Yeah. And what do you make of, you know, the psychiatric community that, or the DSM, which says oppositional defiance disorder, I guess, being a sense of independent streak is pathologized as a disease, as oppositional defiance disorder, but homosexuality is normalized.
Right. You know, I actually know a few psychiatrists. I just am absolutely merciless with them. I mean, they a lot of times they're pretty pompous, but over the years, I've known these guys socially. They live near me. I've been able to browbeat them, so now they have to run away whenever they see me, you know. And I always, one of the things I always do whenever they bring up some like ludicrous pseudo-psychological, you know, like a statistic or meme, I always say, well, was that something that Ewan Cameron developed during his experimentations? You know, it's like I always try to bring it back to, MK Ultra, you know, and, you know, was that something that was done when the patients were under chemical comas? But that was because, you know, it's just when you get into it, there is just so much malevolence that psychiatry has never been called to atone for. Right. I mean, it's been used and misused in so many ways against people. It's just the whole concept of psychiatry. And now, as you point out, it's one of the things that defends homosexuality, promotes it, defends it, you know.
And pathologizes the normal male behavior.
Yeah. Like, they're the authoritarian.
ADD and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. They have these. I mean, I literally, if I could do it, I would basically ban the title. You know, they want to ban like gender specific vocabulary. Mm-hmm. I would ban the word psychiatrist. It's pseudo-psychologic. Mm-hmm. It's an attempt to create kind of intimidation, and it's being used by people who are either complete morons or as evil as rattlesnakes.
Well, I think the best way, the guiding spirit of psychiatry does go back to Sigmund Freud, because I think he's, at one point, a friend of his had invited him to travel to his place for vacation from Vienna, where he was. And he said he'd love to take him up on the offer, but he fears in his absence his patients would get better.
So, hey, well, I think, Freud, like a lot of these guys, had a sense of humor about what he was doing. But, you know, there's really no difference between Freud and his nephew Bernays. It's just all propaganda for the purpose of, mind control and intimidation and to get people to accept cultural and specific individual aspects that are against their interests, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's just how a small group of people can control a large group of people. you know, and it's high time that some sunlight gets shined on that. So, you know, the gay people, and I think that's a term that's, you know, I really don't like to use, but the homosexual individuals who are listening, you know, contact me if you want to have a discussion about this. But my opinion is, and I'm very sure I'm right, is that you are victims.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've been victimized, and you should be aware of this. You should know, as humans, as, you know, sentient beings, you have the right to know when attacks are being levied against you. And I think that the homosexual communities, on both lesbians and males, are you know, are just many, so very often just unaware of how they got there. You know, that the idea that these are just, you know, natural aberrations, and that you know, it's just, it's not the case. It's they are the casualties of an actual military type assault.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Weaponized culture. So, okay, Joe.
Brother. Well, thank you so much, Tim.
Joe?
It's always a pleasure. And, you know, like, take it easy at the gay disco. I know you like to dance. So,
I like to roller skate. That's all.
Yeah. My wife and I have got a disco ball in the living room, and we usually, when I get done with the show, we put on "Burn Baby Burn" Disco Inferno.
Yeah, I play Gloria Gaynor. No, but
yeah, you're Gloria Gaynor.
So
yeah, so no, I stay away from those clubs because I'm a bigot.
Yes. So okay, right, Joe, well, I'll let you go.
Talk to you soon.
Enjoy your weekend. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Thank you.